Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Home First Finance Company India Limited Q4 and FY23 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Manish Kayal, Head Investor Relations at Home First Finance. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Manish Kayal.
Thank you, Renju. Good afternoon, everyone. I hope that all of you and your families are safe and healthy. I am Manish Kayal, and I look after the investor relations of Home First Finance. I extend a very warm welcome to all participants on our Q4 and full year FY23 financial results con call. As usual, Home First management is represented by MD and CEO, Mr. Manoj Viswanathan, and CFO, Ms. Nutan Gaba Patwari. I hope everybody had an opportunity to go through our investor deck and press release, which was uploaded on stock exchanges and on our website yesterday. We'll start this call with an opening remark by Manoj and then Nutan, and then we will have a Q&A session. With this introduction, I hand over the call to Manoj. Over to you, Manoj.
Thank you, Manish. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm pleased to share that Home First has reached several notable milestones in FY23. We now take pride in having served 1 lakh customers since inception, with total housing loans disbursed in excess of 10,000 crores. Our physical branch office distribution has crossed 100 branches. It stands at 111 branches as of 31st March 2023. They have disbursed more than 3,000 crores in this financial year, demonstrating a growth of 48.4% over the previous year. This year saw the entry of International Finance Corporation, a member of the World Bank Group, as a lending partner to the company, with the issue of NCDs aggregating to rupees 280 crores. We also received our first ESG rating score under low risk category from Morningstar Sustainalytics. Declaring our maiden annual dividend of rupees 2.6 per share, which is a 10% dividend payout. Moving on to FY23 financial performance. The profit after tax at rupees 228 crores was a growth of 31.1% on a year-on-year basis over 174 crores in the previous year. This translates to a return on assets of 3.9%, an increase of 30 basis points compared to the last year. As a result, ROE improved sharply by 170 basis points to 13.5% in FY23 over 11.8% in FY22. In quarter four FY23, the company delivered an ROE of 14.4% versus 12.5% in quarter four of FY22. Strong financial results were achieved on the back of good disbursement momentum, AUM growth, portfolio quality, and prudent management of cash and operating costs. The AUM is at 7,198 crores, and it grew by 33.8% on a year-on-year basis. Disbursement momentum continued into quarter four FY23 with a disbursal of 869 crores, which is a growth of 35.6% over quarter four FY22. The portfolio health remains strong with further improvement. Bounce rates have improved to 13.6% in quarter four from 14.9% in quarter three. The 1+ DPD improved to 4% from 4.4% in quarter three, and it has dropped below the March 2020 or pre-COVID levels. 30+ DPD improved to 2.7% from 3% in quarter three. Gross Stage 3 GNPA as per the latest RBI guidelines improved by 20 basis points to 1.6% in quarter four from 1.8% in quarter three. This includes rupees 421 million, which is currently in buckets less than 90 DPD, but they are still included in NPA due to the asset classification norms as per RBI notification dated 12th November 2021. Prior to such classification, it is 0.9% and it stands below March 2020 levels. We will now focus on some of the key drivers and metrics of the business and outlook for the current year. Starting with technology, during quarter four FY23, digital adoption has further improved. Usage of the customer app for various activities has increased. 93% of our customers are registered on the app as of March 2023 compared to 91% in December 2022. Unique user logins have increased to 57% in quarter four from 55% in quarter three. 91% of our service requests were raised on the app compared to 89% in quarter three. We continue to invest in technology, and we have a number of projects lined up for the year that will enable us to widen our moats in origination, underwriting, and collections. Coming to distribution, we added 9 branches in quarter four and a total of 31 branches in the entire year. We now have 111 physical branches. 65 touch points were added this year, taking the total touch points to 265. Our FY23 disbursements in our core segment of rupees 5 lakh-25 lakh ticket size are diversified with top 50 districts of the country, of the industry contributing to 72% of our business. The next 50 districts of the industry contribute to 15% of our disbursals, and the balance 13% comes from districts which are beyond the top 100 districts of the industry. For reference, the top 100 districts of the industry contribute to 62% of the disbursals in the 5 to 25 lakh ticket size segment for the overall industry. We continue to focus our expansion in the states of Gujarat, Maharashtra, AP, Telangana, Karnataka and Tamil Nadu, supplemented by gradual and contiguous expansion in other states where we are present. Expansion will span tier 1, 2 and 3 levels of towns. We are targeting to reach 400 touch points by March 2025. We are targeting an AUM growth of 30% plus for FY24 to enable us to cross the 10,000 crore mark, AUM mark in the next 12 to 18 months. We have a three-pronged approach to growth centered on expanding distribution, increasing market share and expanding the addressable market through co-lending. Talking about margins, FY23 full year spreads stood at 5.7%, which is an improvement from 5.6% of last year. Quarter 4 FY23 spreads were at 5.5%, it declined by 10 basis points on a year-on-year basis. We have increased our rates now by 50 basis points from April 1st onwards, and an overall increase of 125 basis has been given to customers since July 2022. And this will stabilize the spreads going forward. We are confident of maintaining spreads of 5.25% on our loan book in the medium term. Coming to asset quality, it is at pre-COVID levels and we intend to maintain this with a bias towards gradual improvement. Our strategy is to achieve this by strengthening our data-driven risk models and filters. The stability in input parameters post-COVID will enable us to accomplish this. Coming to people, we have always focused on building a high-quality team that is capable of high productivity. We have invested in creating a campus recruitment program with a connect across 200-plus engineering colleges and business schools across the country. Freshers are equipped with the right knowledge and skills through a one-year continuous training and testing process that will make them productive entry-level employees. A majority of our branch managers and cluster managers are selected from amongst existing employees and they are trained on specific skills for the next growth. This year, we have planned some new initiatives to further strengthen our hiring and training programs. With this, I would now like to hand over the call to Nutan to take you through the financials. Nutan, over to you.
Good afternoon all. I will take you through our performance in Q4 FY23. I would like to start by mentioning that now we have crossed 14% ROE and reported quarter 4 ROE of 14.4%. Our Q4 net interest margin is robust at 6.1%. For full year it stands at 6.4%, increase from 5.4% last year on better utilization of balance sheet and PLR increase of 75 basis points we have taken till March 23. I will also like to convey that we have taken another round of hike of 50 basis points from 1st April 23. Net interest income has gone up by 44.6% in FY23 on a YOY basis. For the quarter, it increased by 30.6% on a YOY basis to 101 crores. We did direct assignment of 81 crores during the quarter as a liquidity strategy, approximately 289 crores for FY23. We continue to have a robust demand for our portfolio of assets. We executed co-lending transaction of 35 crores in Q4 and 89 crores in FY23. Co-lending business is growing and expect this to contribute around 10% of business in the near future. OPEX to assets stands at 2.9% for the quarter and 3% for FY23. As guided earlier, we expect this ratio to remain in the range of 3 to 3.2% going ahead as we focus on expansion. Cost to income at 34.4% in Q4, decline of 130 basis points on a YOY basis. For FY23, it stands at 35.7% versus 34% in FY22. Q4 FY23 profit before provisions stands at 91 crores, growth of 11.3% on Q2 basis and 38% on YOY basis. For full year, this is 317 crores, growth of 26% from 251 crores in FY22. Credit cost in Q4 is at 0.4% or 40 basis points and is well within our guided range of 30 to 50 basis points. Our ECL provision stands at 1% of the total principal outstanding. We continue to be conservative with the provisions. Total provision coverage ratio stands at 59.5%. Prior to NPA reclassification as per RBI circular, provision coverage ratio stands at 104.8%. Our adjusted PAT for Q4 is 64 crores, a growth of 9% on a QOQ basis and 32.9% on a YOY basis. For full year FY23, adjusted PAT is 228 crores, increase of 31% over FY22 PAT of 174 crores. Moving to liquidity and borrowings, we continue to have diversified and cost-effective long-term financing sources. During the quarter, we added South Korea's Shinhan Bank and Indian Bank as a new banking partner, and we continue to work towards further diversification. We continue to have a healthy borrowing mix with 58% from borrowings from banks, 15% from NHB refinance, and 19% from direct assignment. We continue to have zero borrowings through commercial paper. Our cost of borrowing is competitive at 7.9% despite not drawing NHB 600 crores in FY23, which we have drawn in April 23. 7.9% represents increase of 70 basis points on a year-on-year basis. We pushed forward drawing the NHB funds in April 23 as we have sufficient liquidity through our lenders, and NHB funds in April 23 will help us manage our cost of borrowing better in FY24. Moving to capital, our total capital adequacy is 49.4% and Tier 1 is 48.9%. Our March 23 net worth is at 1817 crores vis-a-vis 1574 as of March 22. Our quarter 4 ROAA is at 3.9%. Our annualized ROE stands at 13.5% and quarter 4 is at 14.4%. Our book value per share is 206.5 rupees per share. And we have declared our first ever dividend of 2.6 rupees per share. With this, I open the floor for questions and answers.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question comes from the line of Mona Ketan from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening, and thanks for taking up my question. So, firstly, what percentage of AUM has there been an increase in EMI after exhausting the tenor increase for me?
What percentage of AUM has?
For what percentage of AUM have we seen an increase in EMI so far after having exhausted the tenor increase?
So we have looked at it in terms of number of customers. So about 2% of our customers have undergone an increase of more than 1,000 rupees. And another 3% is between 500 to 1,000 rupees. The balance would be either lower than earlier or lesser than 500 rupees.
Sorry, Mona, the line is not clear.
Okay, sorry, I missed some part of the answer. Customer seeing more than 1,000 rupees, right?
I'll repeat. So 5% of the customers have a EMI increase of more than 500 rupees, of which 2% have an increase of more than 1,000 rupees.
Okay. So only 5% of the customers doing that EMI, right?
It's not clear. Not able to hear you clearly.
Okay.
Let me
try again.
So what I'm trying to understand is still only 5% of the customers have by the EMI increase. Yes, yes.
Yeah, a significant number. I mean, there are about another 20% who have an increase between 0 to 500 rupees. But a significant increase is only 5% of the customers.
Got it. The non-system part, with each sharp
decline. I cannot hear you.
Not able to hear.
Okay, just think.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Rahul Maheshwari from Ambit Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Nutan and Manoj, good evening and excellent set of numbers. First of all, also the disclosures regarding the ESG and all, etc., very fantastic. My two questions: in the previous commentary last quarter, you had said in southern markets the ATS is getting stable, in at least in the tier 2 and tier 3 cities, and in northern markets the ATS has witnessed reduction. Can you give some brief color that what has happened in quarter four and what are the insights you're getting in at the start of this financial year?
I think what I was referring to was that in northern markets the ticket sizes are lower than southern markets. In southern markets, the size of the houses and also the material used, etc., is more more extensive. So the ticket sizes tend to be a little higher. So the same trend continues. We are seeing the same trend even in this year or this quarter as well. The ticket sizes in the southern markets are slightly marginally higher than what we see in northern markets.
And on your slide, if we go in where you have given some detailed information on the tech interventions which you have raised on cases, you have developed a lead management system. Can you give some more numerical quantitative details that how it will be helping and in terms of the throughput, how the trajectory you would be seeing going ahead? And second thing, how much leads you are getting on a monthly basis and what is the rejection rate?
So a lead management system is just to streamline the processing of leads. I mean, we are already using Salesforce platform to track our loans. So we just thought the lead management system will act as a central database for all leads which are coming through, and we don't have to run all those leads through our Salesforce system. So that is the reason for building this lead management system. Plus, it also has integrations, with things like SMS, WhatsApp, etc. So it kind of makes it easier to interact with the customers. So in case, we have to provide certain or answer their queries, etc. So there are multiple features in it. It helps to route the cases to the right person, right caller, access the central repository. You can pull various details like bureau, etc. directly from that. So there are many features which helps us to improve the productivity. That's as far as the lead management system is concerned. And as far as number of leads are concerned, so it depends on the channels. Overall, our conversion rate is about 50%, 40 to 50%. So if we are booking about 3,000 to 4,000 loans in a month, then the number of leads would be about double of that. But in certain channels, there are very large number of leads coming through, like in digital channels. So I am not considering that as far as this ratio is concerned.
Related to this, whenever suppose 6,000 to 8,000 leads which you are getting, and of that only 50% is converted, how much fees you are charging at the beginning for those cases also, in case if they are not converted?
So for the leads which get declined straight away based on initial initial parameters, we don't really charge any fees. We don't charge any fees. If the loan looks feasible, I mean, if the relationship manager on the ground feels that the loan is feasible to go through, which satisfies some of the basic criteria, then we charge a login fee, which is about 3,000 rupees.
Okay. I'll come back in queue. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Pranish from ICICI. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Pranish.
Yeah, hi. Hi. Congrats on a great set of numbers. Just one question is on the spread. Okay, so in PPT, we have mentioned that our incremental spread is sort of pretty low at 4.7. So just one thing, is that after considering this 50 basis point rate hike?
No, that is for the prior quarter origination.
Okay, okay. And secondly, which is, sort of linked to this only, so in the opening remarks, we did mention about maintaining spread at around 5.25. But when we look at the incremental spread at 4.7, how confident we are that we'll be able to sort of, meet this 5.25 spread in coming quarters?
So let me just start on this. So 13.4% is our yield for Q4, and we have taken a 50 basis point yield increase in April 23. So we expect that with this increase in yield, the Q1 yield will close around 13.7 to 13.8. That is almost 30 to 40 basis points higher than reported quarter, which is Q4. Now on the cost to borrowing line, because we have drawn down NHB in Q1 and also we are able to maintain a similar marginal cost of borrowing, so we expect that the cost of borrowing will be around the same range or at least not more than 10 basis points higher. So essentially 5.5% spread could practically expand for a very short period in quarter 1. And quarter 2, when the cost of borrowing moves up to 8.20, so 8.20 is a cost, a peak cost of borrowing that we are projecting, it can go back again to 5.50, 5.60 levels. So that is how we are projecting this. So we are very comfortable with the watermark that we have set out for ourselves, which is 5.25. So that's the next two quarter projection on the spread that we have internally. Now we also have to monitor how the RBI repo rate progresses in June and August and then decide if you want to do any further changes.
Okay. So just a clarification, Nutan. So when we do the rate hike, what percentage of our AUM gets repriced, let's say in a month or quarter?
So essentially, for example, for 1st April 23 rate hike, all customers who were on the in the AUM on 31st January will get repriced with the exception of NHB funds.
Got it. So basically, it's a 3-month reset period kind of a thing.
2 months, you can say.
2 months reset period. Okay, okay. And secondly, on the disbursement run rate, this quarter, of course, you know, we have seen the improvement. So what kind of a sequential growth we are expecting, you know, given we have added people and branches in this quarter? So maybe first half, what sort of disbursement growth rate we assume?
So we have always maintained about a 5 to 10% kind of a growth on previous quarter. We intend to maintain that kind of number.
Got it. Got it. Okay. That's it from my side and best of luck.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Mayank Agarwal from InCred Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking the question. My first question is on OPEX. So we witnessed a 7% QOQ growth on OPEX while there was no branch addition this quarter. So is this because of the increased disbursement or we might see an increased number of branches next quarter so that OPEX was up-fronted? And my second question is on margins again. So basically, your current forecast is factoring the rate pause or you are still factoring the rate hike or a rate reduction in this fiscal for the, you know, what you guided for a 5.25 spread?
So on the first operating cost, we've actually added 8 branches in Q4. Sorry, 9 branches in Q4, and that is also mentioned in our presentation. So that is where the operating cost increase is coming from. The second question on margins, it assumes that there is no rate change by RBI, either upwards or downwards. We will have to watch how it progresses in June and then take further action.
Okay. And secondly, are you witnessing any kind of increasing competition from, say, small regional players or anything? It is higher than what you've seen witnessing a year ago. Any color on that?
No significant change. I mean, competition has always been there in this segment, so no significant change as such.
And the last question is on your DA income this quarter. It was high, but just because you have done more assignments or anything specific there?
No, just the volume, and we've also given the volume trends. Largely, we have mentioned that we will stick around this 100 crore plus minus 20 crore, and that's where we have landed. So, presenting the volume only.
Cool. Thanks. That's really useful. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Chandra from Fidelity. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I had a few questions. Manoj, maybe you can just help me tell us what is the, while you've given the number in terms of rupees increase, what is the percentage increase in the EMI for these customers? One, and second is, what does this mean to the FOIR at this point in time versus origination? What's been the change in FOIR if you've done some work around that?
Yeah, so percentage increase, if you take a 500 rupees, so we have basically looked at two buckets, 500 to 1000 and 1000 plus. So 500 rupee increase would be like a 5% increase in the EMI generally, because EMI, average EMI is about 10,000 rupees. And so 1000 rupees would be about 10%. So 5 to 10%, maximum 15% would be the kind of EMI increase, which is there for that 5% of the customers. FOIR again, we can calculate, because average FOIR is about 40%. So on 40%, if you were to look at it, say 25,000 rupees. On 25,000 rupees, there would be a 2.5%, 2.5 to 5% change in the FOIR.
Right. Secondly, I mean, you also said that once you cross at a 14%, that you eventually start moving. To a different target segment of customers, those which you may not necessarily want to do business, given that sort of, your incremental lending yields are at 14 and you would be sort of disbursing it at these rates, does the customer profile start changing, in any material way?
Yeah, so which is where we have kept the incremental, lending rate at about 13.5%. If you see, even for the current quarter, origination rate is 13.5%. So we are always trying to keep it below the 14%, because 14% we feel there is a psychological threshold and where you move into a different segment. So we originated between 13 and 14%, and if we have to reprice it, we reprice it after a quarter or so, because then it just gets passed on as a tenure increase and not as a EMI increase.
Right. So could you just tell me maybe what's been the origination yield at on HL and LAP at this time? I mean, after the rate hike which you've taken?
So HL would be about, the blended rate is about 13.5, and LAP would be giving us about 30 basis points. So 13.2% for HL.
So even after the April increase, you're originating at 13.2?
No, this is before the increase. This is at the origination, time of origination.
Right. Okay, so even at origination, for your new customers, you'll be originating a slightly lower and then take a rate increase later.
Exactly.
Right.
At the time of origination, we are keeping it below 14%, and then we increase it after maybe a couple of quarters, if required.
Right. And this quarter, the repayment rate was a little higher. Is it just the CLSS subsidy, or is there anything else?
Yeah, there was a big CLSS subsidy tranche which came in this quarter, which is almost 8% of the contributes 8% of the erosion, portfolio erosion.
Right. And then just lastly, I don't know, Nutan, when do we come up for our next rating review? I mean, obviously you just had an upgrade a while back, but trying to see that, is it like in a year or a couple of years? How do we just think about that? And just within the context right now, currently, could you just help us with what leverage caps which you have to be, which sort of informally you're working with?
So, Chandra, on the rating improvement, essentially it's now an outcome of scale, subject to, we maintaining good asset quality like we have been, diversification in terms of markets. Also, improvement in profitability, everything else remaining the same. It is a function of scale. So let's say once we cross 10,000 crores, let's say in the next 15 months, 12, 15 months, and let's say 3 to 6 months from then. So give or take about 18 months broad timeline is what we think it should take for the next rating upgrade. Now, coming to your second question on leverage, see, we are actually at 3.6 as we speak. Now, this is really, if you look at from a debt to equity, it's around 2.6. So, not significant leverage, and capital adequacy is also high, and we get a 35% risk weight benefit. So, in our conversations with rating agencies, they are comfortable with a debt to equity of almost 5 times. We've also been talking about 100 crores of assignment every quarter. We've also been talking about co-lending of 10% of disbursements. So this really allows us to look at a very different AUM from, let's say, 5 years before, where some of these products couldn't be scaled the way they can today. So the AUM context would be very different, but you know, your asset to equity could still operate at, let's say, a 5, 5.5, 6x in the next rating cycle. So some of these questions haven't bothered us, and we are remaining focused on growth per se, and we think that AA will happen in the next 15-18 months once we cross 10,000 crores AUM.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Kunal Shah from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Manoj and Nutan. So firstly, sorry, taking up on the taking forward a Chandra's question. In terms of this CLSS subsidy, I didn't get the number. It was 8% of AUM. What was the absolute quantum, if you can highlight?
Yeah, so 138 crores is the absolute amount of CLSS subsidy that we received in Q4. In FY23, we received 266 crores. And with this, the good news is that we've received everything, so no more dues on this particular line. If you look at it percentage terms, our total asset runoff was 25%. 8% out of this was pertaining to CLSS. And
basically the annualized erosion rate we have calculated. So
yeah. So out of 422 odd crores, 138 crores is this, and then there is BT out of 1.5 non-annualized.
Yes.
And when we look at this entire BT out, so given that there is another further 50 odd bips kind of an increase which we have done from April, so any risk out there in terms of elevated BT out, or this is more kind of a Q4 phenomena?
Yeah, it is basically a Q4 phenomena. If you see, last Q4 also was high. Actually, it was higher than this Q4. If you see Q4 22. So it's just a Q4 phenomena.
Okay, so rate hike would also not have too much of impact on this. And again, we should see it normalizing in the company.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be. Because last Q4, I mean, rates were low and the BT outs were also, again, high. So it's more of a quarter end phenomena, looks like.
Sure. And then in terms of the branches, so again, full year, we added more than 30 odd branches, and you have been highlighting that maybe for another couple of years, should we see similar kind of a run rate, or maybe we have done some part of it and now it should slow?
No, I wouldn't say slow, maybe similar kind of pace, about 20 to 30 branches, 20 odd branches we can say.
Okay. And overall in terms of the disbursement, so again, after 18, 24 months or maybe 2 years down the line, because when we look at it, it's like say from 19 to 22, there have hardly been like 20 odd branches which were added, and still there is a strong run rate of disbursements. So once this branches mature, almost like say 30 on 80 odd branches, which is again more than 30-35 odd percent, so then the disbursements should see a strong uptick once the maturity is there, and maybe at least this growth momentum can sustain.
Yes. I mean, we get disbursements from all categories of branches. So, you know, I mean, we will continue to put some new branches, and the growth momentum is coming from the larger branches as well.
Okay, sure. And in terms of the OPEX, overall, when we look at the OPEX to expense ratio, it should stabilize. We are not seeing any, maybe 3-odd percent levels which are there. Obviously, from 2.7, it has gone up to 3% for the full fiscal with the 30-odd branch expansion. So I think broadly should be able to sustain this kind of...
Probably around this level. We had said when it was at 2.5, 2.7, we said it will go up to 3, 3.2. So that is what we are maintaining. Maybe for some more time it will be stay at these kind of levels, and before it starts coming down.
Sure. And lastly, in terms of the ROE trajectory, so it's commendable that maybe 30-50 bips kind of addition every quarter accretion which is happening. But now incrementally, what would be the levers available, both in terms of the ROE and ROE?
So, you know, some of the levers you know, we have to really utilize the co-lending and DA to full potential. So that is, you know, one of the aspects. We are looking closely at credit cost as well. So some of those things are there. We can further optimize, you know, some of our cash utilization. So let's say even if we are able to hold on the ROA at around 3.7, 3.8 levels, with the increased leverage, we are hopeful that, you know, we should be able to move towards 15% ROE trajectory in the next 2 to 3 quarters.
Okay. So co-origination, securitization, and secondly, you mentioned credit cost also. Any levers available?
So credit cost, Kunal, if you see, we are still carrying 1% of provision of ECL as a percentage of our principal outstanding. Now, when the 30 DPD is 2.7%, you know, sometime we'll have to relook at it. So, you know, some of those areas we will take a closer look and see if there is an opportunity. And the fourth area that I also mentioned was cash utilization.
Sure. Okay. Got it. Got it. Thanks and thanks and all the best. Yeah.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Ravi Naredi from Naredi Investments. Please go ahead.
Thank you to give me this opportunity. Manoj, really a wonderful result. My question is, in quarter four, interest income rises 47%, while net profit rise only 7%, and finance cost rise 76%.
So the question is, why the
quarter four interest income rise by 47%, net profit rise by 7%, and finance cost rise by 76%. So what are the reasons?
76%.
This is 204 is the interest income against 139.
Sir, you are looking at quarter four versus quarter four last year or quarter three?
Yeah, quarter four last year.
Quarter four, the total income is 138.7 crores for this year quarter four versus 102 crores for last year quarter four. So that's a 35.3% increase in total income.
Or the finance cost rises more than that.
So that is because, sir, if I may answer this question, the finance cost has gone up because, sir, there has been a lag in the increase in cost of borrowing. If you look at our last 4 quarters of cost of borrowing, though the repo rate has increased by 250 basis points, our rate has increased only by approximately 70 basis points. And there has been a very high degree of lag. We were able to maintain almost flat levels of cost of borrowing in Q1 and Q2. Because they're linked to MCLR borrowing, so there has been a lot of lag and the cost of borrowing increased only in Q3 and substantially in Q4. That is the reason why you are seeing a sharper increase in interest expense versus interest income. But when you look at it, sir, at a full year level, the interest income has gone up by 43% and the interest expense has gone up by 41%. So we've performed better, sir.
Or this other expenses also high, very high. 175 million against 115 million.
Sir, as we expand the businesses into more branches and more people, that is the reason. But sir, if you see the overall quality of return, that has improved sharply on a quarter-on-quarter basis consistently.
Okay. And Mr. Manoj, can we assume that 30% CAGR growth is possible in next 2-3 years?
Yes, sir. We are targeting AUM growth of about 30% over the next 2-3 years.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you and all the best, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Sanket Chheda from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Congrats on good set of numbers. The setting new standards as far as disclosures are concerned. So, quite good disclosures. Particularly, my question was on OPEX. So last year we had guided that we'll carry on with some investments in this year, wherein the OPEX should be around 3 to 3.2. We have closed it at about 3%, and last couple of quarters the OPEX has been lower at about 2.8, 2.9. So how do we see this now over FY 24-25?
So, Sanket, we still want to expand, let's say, from 265 touch points to 400 odd in the next 2 years, which will essentially mean more branch locations, physical branch locations, more people, more travel and all of that. And as you know, that you know there is a vintage by when by which the brands really starts to perform and the productivity etc. picks up. So basis all of that, we've done a bottom up analysis and we are projecting a 3 to 3.2% operating cost. So we have calibrated it to say that if you want to do 30% plus growth, this level of operating cost is essential today to be able to maintain this. So operating cost will be directly variable on a growth perspective. So this is something we have in mind.
Okay. Okay. And now that the stress is also normalized in terms of such the credit cost, what run rate do we see in 24-25?
30 to 40 basis points. We don't need more than that.
Okay, the same.
Yeah.
Sure. I think yeah, those were the two questions from me. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Raghav Garg from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. A couple of questions. First one on the treasury income side. So I see that you've reported about 95 million of treasury income this quarter. The run rate usually has been about 22 million in last few quarters. When I look at that as percentage of average assets, that's about 1.6% versus a run rate of about 1.1% in last several quarters. So can you explain what is the reason behind this bump up and whether this is sustainable or not?
Right. So, Raghav, when you look at the overall treasury investment management, it essentially falls into three buckets. We look at liquid funds, essentially overnight funds for the very short-term liquid funds, which carries no underlying risk. The second category is deposits with the consortium banks, and the third category is T-bills. Now, depending on the underlying disbursal and operating cost plan, we choose between these three products, essentially depending on where we think we can maximize the returns, even if it is 10 or 20 basis points. So in this quarter, it so happens that we placed more deposits and lesser liquid funds, which is why you've seen a reduction in mutual fund income and an increase in the bank deposit income in our fact sheet. Coming to your second part of the question on sustainability, at a very high level, this presents almost a 6.5 to 6.6% of yields on the funds placed across these three categories. So it will depend on two things. One, the rate, operating rate in the market, and secondly, volume. As far as volume is concerned, we don't expect to increase it by any meaningful number. So we want to keep approximately 2 months of disbursals with us in cash and cash equivalents on the balance sheet to optimize our cash holdings. So that we will continue to do. So we don't expect the overall treasury income to be changing meaningfully. It can change between the three categories.
Right. So is this understanding correct that, you know, the run rate will not be as high, or whether if we look at this, the yield that you just mentioned around 5-6% versus around 1-1.5% that we've seen previously is not sustainable? Is that, would that be fair to assume?
No. So it will really depend on where the repo rate is. So so long as the repo rate is 6.5%, there is no reason why this should change. We have not seen 1.5% earlier. Earlier, we used to see more in the range of 4-4.5%, which is similar to the repo rate then. So it is really a function of the repo rate at that point of time.
Understood. My second question is on your PLR hike. So if I do the math, July you had taken about 25 basis points, December again another 50 basis points, cumulatively that's about 75 basis points that you've taken in FY23, but on your reported yields, the increase is only about 60 basis points. So can you explain, you know, whether, you know, to what extent have you been able to pass on the rate hikes that you've taken in FY23? And in light of that, how confident are you that this 50 basis points PLR hike that you've taken in April 2023, to what extent will you be able to pass that on in order to mitigate any margin compression?
So let me break down this for you. So when we take any rate hike, we look at various pools of AUM and there is one significant chunk which is your NHB AHF pool, which is a fixed rate pool on asset side as well as liability side where we do not increase the rate. Now please also remember that this particular pool has similar or better spreads to us in itself. So, you know, there is no need to worry from a spread compression on that particular part of the pool. So that pool has been about 700 crores. More recently, it's increased to 900 crores. So when we take any rate hike, we have to exclude 900 crores out of our total rate hike pool. So when you look at the blended increase in the yield line, the drop from 75 to 60 represents the fact that you've not taken any increase on the pool at a, so this is how it is visible, but it does not impact the spread because it is fixed in nature on both sides.
Sure, understand. This 700 crores that you're mentioning, this is as of March 2023, is it?
Yes, this is as of March and 900 as of April.
Under Affordable Housing Fund.
Yes, yes.
Right. Do you have any visibility or, you know, any sense whether the at NHB level, whether this AHF fund will be rolled over or whether it will get any new deposits in FY24 or not?
So out of the 600 crores that we have drawn down in FY24 in the month of April, we already have received 300 in, under this fund. This next application will happen in July because the NHB refinance year is July to June. So we will have to engage with the officials at that point of time and we will only have a better understanding perhaps in Q2 of this year.
Sure. And, you know, if at a system level the AHF fund does not get rolled over in FY24, would that mean that, you know, typically if a company is lending under the AHF, then without it there would be some kind of pressure on margins for a typical housing finance company? Would that be correct to assume?
No, simply because, you know, it's a very small set of our book today. If you see, like I mentioned, 700 crores as of March out of 7,200. And we're able to manage the margins and the spreads in the rest of the book. So nothing to nothing, you know, mentioned that, you know, there will be impact or anything of that sort.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Nutan. That's all from my side. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Amit Ganatra from Invesco AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Couple of questions. One is that... you know, I think at the beginning of the last year, so on the during first quarter con call, you had mentioned that, you know, spreads from 5.8 can come down to 5.25. Now, if you see, the spreads have come down to 5.5. But when they have touched 5.5, your guidance seems to be that spreads should remain stable. So, any specific reason as to why this change in thought process? When it comes to spread. So that's my first question and I'll ask the second question later.
So Amit, maybe I can get started. So our guidance still remains at 5.25 on the lower end. What we are trying to say that the visibility for the next quarter seems to be stable on spread.
Yeah, and also I guess now, I mean, 1 year after that, sitting where we are today, the overall outlook on interest rates seems to be more that it will I mean, there may be a minor increase or it will flatten out. So which is the reason for our slight change in stand?
Okay. And you're on the borrowing side, I mean, your reported cost of borrowing is 7.9, right?
Yes.
And what is the incremental right now cost of borrowing?
Around 870-880 excluding NHB.
Okay. That was my other question, that in terms of your borrowing mix, why is it that NHB as a percentage is continuously coming down?
So if you see March 22, we were at around 27%. And in the last four quarters, we did not draw down any NHB, which we drawn down in April 23. So when you look at Q1, that number will go back to 20 plus levels. So it's just a function of when we have drawn down the funds.
Okay. Okay. So during the course of the year, you did not draw down anything.
Yes.
That's why it kept on coming down. And now, once again, you know, if you start if you're saying that in April you have drawn down, so automatically
yes.
in first quarter
yes.
it should go up.
Yes.
So then if that happens, then that also helps in terms of overall cost of funds, right?
Absolutely. So that's why we are saying that, you know, our quarter one cost of funds will not go up. See, if you remember, Amit, we've always said that, you know, there is a lot of lag in MCLR. So the increase actually started to happen in Q3. Q3, Q4, Q1 should be the maximum increase given the lag. So we've seen the increase in Q3, Q4, but because of NHB, we are saying we should be able to hold it in Q1 and then see another 20-30 basis points in Q2, and then that's a flat line after that.
Okay, okay. After that, okay, you're saying then that should be a flat line.
Yes.
And cost, you are saying that you still will be in the investment mode.
Yes, we have to be, right.
Okay. So more or less, from a ROA perspective, this year, the fact that you managed to protect ROA itself is decent, right? Because overall, there was this possibility that ROAs could have declined. I mean, at the beginning of the year, considering interest rates going up, there was this possibility,
yes.
but that
yes.
that has not happened. So now the important thing is that more or less, we should be able to maintain ROAs at these levels and leverage should go up.
Absolutely.
Should drive ROEs, right? That should be
the process. That is the purpose.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Firstly, on the disbursement, can you share the disbursement per branch on 3 years vintage branches, the branches which we have opened 3 years back? What is the disbursement per branch on an annual basis for FY23 from those branches?
3 years plus vintage generally will be about 3 crores plus. I mean, we don't have the figure off the cuff right away. Just ballpark, it will be about 3 crores plus per branch.
3 crores plus per month?
Per month, yes.
Sure. And secondly, in the distribution, in the origination, the share of connectors continues to go up. So the origination mix is becoming much more concentrated towards connectors. So does it worry you, or is it a stated strategy that connectors is the best segment to originate loans?
No, the connector group itself is a very diversified group, and it's the distribution of loans is also very diversified. So, you know, most of the connectors are only providing us one or two loans in a month. You know, they also, the connectors are also from different categories. So these are not large, large entities which are giving us any concentrated business. So we are very comfortable with this channel. If you look at asset quality, also the connected group's asset quality is good or better than the overall average. So we are very comfortable with this channel.
And what was the count of active connectors for the quarter?
Active connectors for the quarter is about 2,200.
2382. Okay. There is a significant increase quarter on quarter in active connectors in this quarter.
Yeah.
I think last quarter was only 2100 connectors.
Yes.
Correct. Right. About 200 plus.
And lastly, on the operating cost, when should we expect operating leverage cost to asset ratio to start improving? FY24, you are saying that we will still be in investment mode. Should we expect operating leverage to play out from FY25, or that will be early to expect that?
I think from FY25, operating leverage should play out. The objective is to bring the cost to income at least marginally lower in FY25.
Nidesh, having said that, you know, if you compare us with you know, the larger players in the affordable housing industry or even the prime industry, we are actually quite competitive when it comes to operating cost. Whether you look at it in OPEX to AUM per loan or per lack of disbursal, whichever way you slice it, So from that perspective, the focus right now is growth and of course maintaining the right optimal levels, not overstressing about operating costs and compromising growth. So it's really a choice that we are making to focus on growth, maintain right asset quality, and then also and not go overboard on operating cost. We've been maintaining this 3% approximately, which is actually quite good.
Sure. Just last question on the LAP segment, which is witnessing reasonably strong growth, and the share of LAP has now increased to almost 13%. And we have guided that long term we want to keep the share of LAP at around 15%. So if you can share what is the ticket size in LAP and is the 15% limit still holds true for us?
Yeah, we are currently disbursing at about 15% rate. And so I guess maybe in a couple of quarters the AUM will also catch up to that level. So at the moment our stand is that we'll stay with 15%. We'll see the portfolio quality for maybe a few more quarters too before we start taking a decision to take it further up. The ticket sales are generally in the same range as our regular housing loans. No major difference.
Sure. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Kartik Chellappa from Indus Capital Advisors Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Hi, Manoj and Nutan. Congrats on the quarter. So I have three questions. The first, if we were to look at your 78,000 odd borrowers, how many of them, either anecdotally or so, would you think have either experienced a drop in their income or possibly faced a job loss?
Because of
various other things, it could be economic, it could be macro, etc. But I'm just trying to see what portion of your customers, based on the interactions that your field officers had with them, would have experienced a drop in income, whether it is inflationary or macro or fall in demand or any reason.
So generally, I would say on if you look at it on a steady state basis, we keep reviewing our collection cases which go into collection. Typically about 15 to 20% of the cases, the reason comes as job loss. I'm talking about the collection, but the ones which slip into collections. And in most of the cases, the resolution is also that the customer has got another job. So now he will catch up on his installments. So in job loss cases, we don't normally see a permanent delinquency. So this is all from our collection experience.
And the 15 to 20%, what was this pre-COVID? Has it gone up in any significant manner, or is this more in line with the trends?
Well, ratios have actually come down to pre-COVID levels. I mean, if you see your one-day past due, it's at 4%. So, since the numbers have come back to pre-COVID levels, we are not seeing anything different from our pre-COVID times. And 30 DPD has also come down to 2.7. So generally the reasons are similar. Job loss, temporary job loss, and the customer will get back another job or is getting another job. The reasons are more, problem is more permanent in cases of medical problems, where there is a serious medical issue in the family, etc. But those are also, the ratios are generally the same. We have not seen any particular reason going up as such.
Got it. My next question is, if we were to just look at our AUM mix by credit history, the new credit is now almost 20%. And if I'm right, it's probably one of the lowest among our previous, 2 to 3 years or so. Typically, what is the difference in the yield with due to credit and customers with a credit score? And at what point of time do you think you'll be comfortable to increase this ratio?
This ratio is actually coming down because it's more of a market phenomenon where more and more customers are getting some form of credit, and they end up getting a score. So we are seeing true to our segment, which is people who are building their first home, between 20 to 50,000 income levels, coming with some form of informal income, etc. So in that segment, more and more customers are getting credit, you know, either a small personal loan or a consumer loan, etc. As a result of which, they're getting a score. So this number, according to us, is actually reducing secularly every quarter. So every quarter, you're seeing a 1%, 2% kind of a drop in this number. So, I mean, it's just a question of time. You know, maybe in the next six to eight quarters, it will vanish completely. I mean, you may not find customers in our segment who don't have a credit bureau score. So that is really the way we are looking at it.
Oh, okay, interesting. And my last question is basically on channels. Now, in the past, we've had this separate channel which we are trying to develop called strategic alliances, and I think we have an officer heading that. But there are the channels, exclusively connectors, even branches, they are actually down, and these strategic alliances doesn't even cross 1%. What constraint are you actually facing in scaling up this channel, if any?
So it is a, I mean, it's a channel which, you know, which has multiple problems that need to be solved. And, you know, the partners are also working towards it. We are also working towards it. The challenge is not getting leads. I think I've mentioned this in the past also, that we get a very large number of leads through these channels. Intervention that the connector provides, you know, the connector is actually filtering the leads to understand which customer is serious, which customer is eligible, etc. So there is some validation being provided by the connector, which is absent in the other channels, in the strategic alliance channels, because there the leads come through without much filtration. So as a result of which, the conversion rates are low. So we are working with the partners to see how to address this challenge. And at some point, there will be a good enough solution to it, and then the channel will start scaling up.
Okay. What exactly is the difference between a connector and a micro connector?
Sorry, a connector and a?
Okay.
Sorry, Kartik. Connector and a?
And a micro connector. You also have another bifurcation called micro connector, MICRO.
Yeah.
So, can you see what's the difference?
Yeah. So, just a subtle classification difference. Micro connectors are located, near the branches. I mean, they are like neighborhood shops. Whereas these connectors are, more of people who are in the real estate segment or in the financial services segment, and they are in touch with, touch with our kind of customers. So, the neighborhood shops arrangement or relationship with neighborhood shops, we call it as micro connectors.
Okay, got it. Very clear. Thank you very much for these replies, and wish you and the team all the very best for FY24. Thank you.
Thanks, Vasu.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Abhijit Tibrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Manoj. I'm Mr. Congrats on a good quarter. I joined around 20 minutes late, so please let me know in case some of the questions that I ask is a repetition. I'll listen to the recording after the call.
No worries.
First things first, I mean, have you already addressed why we chose to increase the provisioning cover in this quarter?
We've kept it at the similar levels compared to what we've been doing last 5 or 6 quarters. No.
1%. We wanted to keep it at 1% of the overall book, so we have kept it at that. We'll observe how our delinquencies go over the next 4 quarters. Then we'll take a call on whether to, bring that down or not.
Got it. And secondly, other income that we are seeing now, it's a fair thing to analyze it, right? Then the other question that I had was on the branches. Some of the mature branches that we have today, in terms of productivity, do you think that they are anywhere close to their peak capabilities in terms of the kind of AUM that they manage, or do you think we still have basically capabilities in even our mature branches to further scale up?
So we are looking at branches reaching at least 200 crores before we start thinking about them tapering off. So I think at the moment we have only maybe one branch which is approaching that number. But we have a lot of branches in the 100 to 200 category, so or 100 to 150 category. But, so they still have maybe at least a couple of years to go before they will, I mean, we can start thinking about them tapering off. But I think every time a branch crosses a certain threshold, we are able to discover, you know, new ways of making them more productive. So we are hoping that even at the 200 crore barrier, we'll be able to kind of push it further.
Got it. Manoj, maybe one more question that I had was, again, I'm not trying to suggest that we should grow faster. As a matter of fact, I feel analysts or investors are happy if you kind of continue to grow at maybe a 30% kind of a CAGR over the next few years. But just trying to understand, when you look at the demand which is there in the affordable housing segment, when you look at some of your peers in the unlisted affordable housing segment and the rate at which you are growing, so is it that we are consciously kind of trying to maintain these levels of disbursements so that our asset quality is under control, we cherry pick our customers, we are able to pick and choose which customers we want to lend to, or I mean, basically what I'm trying to read into is, given that there is so much demand, given that there is so much of disbursements that's happening even from some of the unlisted affordable players, are we making a conscious decision of keeping disbursements under check, or how should we kind of read this?
To some extent, I mean, we are focusing on, it's a question of bandwidth. I mean, if we put all our attention on disbursals, maybe, as you mentioned, we can grow more. But we are trying to just balance it because we also have to create an organization that will be able to handle a much larger book. You know, coming back to the question on branches, we have to start thinking what happens when a branch hits 150 crores or 200 crores, how do we make it more productive? So we are also spending time on answering some of those questions and getting the branches ready for that. That occupies some time. And plus, we are also, I mean, if you see our rate of interest has been extremely good. Even though we have very little loan against property, our blended yields are very strong, if you see compared to our peers. So that is also another area, you know, where we kind of focus. So we are trying to get the right kind of customers, in the segment who are willing to pay that kind of rate, that also is, is one of the parameters that we look at. So given all this, given that we want to create a strong foundation, for a strong brand structure, get the right kind of customer who will pay us a good yield, so we feel comfortable with a 30% kind of a growth rate.
One last question for Nutan. Nutan, here if we assume basically two scenarios that going forward there are no more repo rate hikes, and assuming another 25 basis points repo rate hike, under these scenarios versus where we are in terms of cost of borrowings, where should we be if there are no repo rate hikes and if there is a 25 basis point repo rate hike? Where should I cost of borrowing stabilize? And against these two scenarios, in case there is a 25 basis point hike, what is the, I would say, increase in yields that you would have to take to maintain or to meet that guidance of stable spreads from here?
Right. So let's go one by one. The first scenario is where there is no more changes in the repo rate. So we are seeing that our cost of borrowing will peak out at 8.20 in the next two quarters. So that is the peak. Now, moving to the second scenario, if there is a 25 basis points rate hike in repo in June, let's say, we will see this 8.20 getting to 8.40. So then that takes us to the yield question. So if we want to stick to 5.25, we frankly don't have to do much. We don't have to do anything. But, you know, it will be a call at that point of time, how we want to look at new growth versus old customers, how we want to look at this whole EMI portfolio, etc. And at that stage, we can decide if we want to pass on or want to absorb. But those decisions will have to come post the June rate hike, if it happens.
Sure, that's all from my side. And thank you and all the very best to you and the team.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Nischint Chawathe from Kotak Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. Firstly, you mentioned that your incremental cost of funds is around 8.7-8.8%.
Right.
Then how do you sort of, expect your, average cost to sort of flatten out as 8.2? I understand that, there is some support coming from NHB, but, if your incremental rate is higher than your weighted average, then, it should kind of, start, continue to inch up, right?
Right. So we've discussed this. So there is a 50 to 70 basis points, impact that comes because of the NHB present. So we've taken 600 crores of NHB drawdown in April, in the middle of April. So that will really help us to hold our rates at around 7.9 to 8% in quarter one. And then, of course, because if I look at the rate today, it is below 7.9 because of a sudden increase in NHB in April. But, of course, the lag is also being passed on. So, I will touch closer to 7.98 for the full quarter. And then 8.1 to 8.2 is the peak that we are seeing in Q2. So this essentially depends on what is the mix of NHB in the overall borrowing book. So as long as I am at 20% levels broadly, I will continue to get that 60-70 basis points impact on the blended cost of borrowing.
So basically 8.2, you're just sort of building in the annual borrowing program.
Yes. And for the first half of this year, we've already drawn down in April. So it's no longer if or when, it's already done.
Got it. The second question is on collections. Your stage 2 is at around 1.1%.
Yes.
I think peak was, as in the, the best was like 80 or 90 basis points in 2018 or so.
Yes.
Do you think that we are already there at the, best level where we can be, is there a scope of improvement? And do you see that we are already at the best levels where we can be or, can we improve further? And probably how was April versus April last year?
We are more or less there in terms of the, pre-COVID levels. Of course, our aim is to keep on improving, and I think as the, as our experience also keeps growing, we will be able to improve it. Maybe not substantially, but at least marginally, we will keep improving it. Because our experience on, what works, what doesn't work, will keep on increasing. So we will implement that and we will try to bring some improvements. So we are more or less there. We will keep trying to improve marginally from here on.
And how was April? Was April last year?
April last year was compared to April last year was substantially. April is substantially. Like March versus last March has been substantially better. So the April is on that base, and generally we don't have that kind of a skew in March. Our first quarter is generally, similar to our last quarter of the previous year. So I would say, there's nothing significant to report as far as April is concerned. It was a good month. Are you talking about collections or are you talking about disbursal?
I'm talking about collections.
Collections, yeah. So,
so the collection efficiency, which I think some of your peers put out, we'll probably say that April versus April would not be very different.
No, not it won't be very different. Be very similar. In fact, April versus March itself is very, very, very similar. I would say maybe just a marginal difference.
So, got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Jatin Sangwan from Permanent Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I wanted to understand, under the breakup of this other non-interest income, there is a section called other. It was more or less zero for the last 8 quarters. Now it has increased to 4.5 crores. What is this income related to?
So we started some work on using our website for marketing, etc., and we are getting revenue against that. We expect that this will be consistent on a quarterly basis going forward.
Okay, great. And second question is around the AUM growth. You are guiding for 30% AUM growth for FY24. Is that a conservative guidance? Because on one hand, you are guiding for 5 to 10% QOQ growth for disbursements, and repayment rate will come down as there will be no impact of PLSS subsidy. So just doing the back-end calculation, you will be growing at 35-36% growth. So are you being conservative by giving like 30% growth guidance for FY24?
If I say I'm conservative, that means I'm giving away the game. No? Can't, I can only say we are aiming for 30%.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Amit Ganatra from Invesco AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just one question I missed was this co-lending business. Can you explain now? You know, if this business grows, then what kind of implication it has on? First of all, where does the income get booked? Just like you know any other, I mean, lending that you do, the entire thing gets reported in interest income and interest expense in your proportion, or how does it get recognized?
Yeah, so as far as reporting goes, Amit, it gets reported in the respective lines. There is no upfronting in co-lending. No, you know, spiking of income or expense. So it's just only tenor based for our portion as well as for the portion of the bank. The only portion that we get upfront is the processing fee that we collect from the customer. And when we sell down 80%, so that part of the processing fee comes to us in the quarter where we actually transfer the loans. And which is not very large number. Coming to the portion of how we are looking at it from an overall level, see, once we do the transfer to the bank, we are able to leverage our book much better. That's one, from a financial perspective. Second, we are able to actually address the adjacent market because we actually can look at a sizable portion of, slightly higher ticket cases, 20, 25, 30 lakhs, where the borrower expects a lower rate of interest. So that then opens up and it also improves productivity for our front-end teams. So those are the broad two or three aspects on how we're looking at it. Maybe I can just request Manoj to share how we're looking at expanding this.
Yeah, mainly co-lending will have the impact of helping us expand the addressable market. I mean, that's the key benefit from co-lending. Because we end up spending time on distribution, building distribution. But in some places what happens is, in the same area there are, adjacent ticket sizes. In the same project, same area, there are adjacent ticket sizes that come to us. So we generally operate in the 5 to 25 lakhs. But when a ticket size comes in the 25 to 40 lakh range, generally the customers are a little more rate conscious, they are a little more formal in their overall outlook, and as a result of which they are more rate conscious. So that is a segment that we have to give up. I mean, we may end up even meeting the customer, but then the customer does not take the loan from us. So that is a customer segment that we can address through co-lending, and it helps us overall improve our productivity of our teams, improves our brand presence in the market, improves our clout in the market. So that is really how we are looking at co-lending, and of course it is ROE accretive product, because you know the capital allocation from our side is also very low for this product. So overall it is a win-win, and for the bank it is very good because they get extra distribution, so it's good for them as well.
But from a customer's perspective, he is taking loan from your company only, right? Or is he aware that there is a bank?
Yeah, customer is taking. I mean, we are the front face for the customer. So customer knows that he's going to interact with us through the life of the loan. He is made aware that there is a it's a co-lending product, so there are two parties involved. That is something that we make the customer aware. And for that anyway, the customer is getting a benefit of a lower rate.
Okay. So effectively, I mean, if proportion of co-lending goes up, then from a optical perspective, it has a deflationary impact on your yield as well as cost, right?
What did you say? Inflationary impact on the
deflationary, because if co-lending goes up as a proportion, then the reported yields tend to go down? Reported cost
of
borrowing.
No, will, yeah, but we are reporting the yields or the origination yields, we are reporting ex co-lending.
Yeah. So see, if you see the page 27 of the presentation, the 13.5 is excluding co-lending.
Okay, but from a calculated perspective, when we calculate, it will
yes.
it will come down,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And leverage goes up. If
leverage goes up.
But leverage, why should it go up? I mean, you have the same risk weight, right? So why should leverage go up?
It will go up when you look at it from an AUM perspective.
No, but when they calculate also, it should work out, no? Because the principal on our book is only 20%.
Mm-hmm.
So the interest that we're getting will be measured on the 20%, not on the total. So the yield also should work out.
But it's a lower yield loan. That's why.
Lower rate to the customer. But
lower rate to the customer. So the blended will go down. What is our
affordable? It goes down, but leverage should not necessarily go up, right? It basically, it helps you to improve your leverage faster is what I can understand.
Yes.
Yes.
There was a possibility that this customer would never have been your customer. If co-lending was not a product available to you.
Absolutely.
So it helps you to report a higher growth. It actually helps you to improve your TAM to some extent.
Yes.
And to a large extent, I mean, since the risk and everything is shared, so to that extent, yeah, it's actually a win-win at this stage if it works.
Correct. And the customer also is marginally better because it's a formal customer.
Correct. Exactly. No, understood. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Arvind R. from Sundaram Alternates. Please go ahead.
Hi, a good set of numbers. I just have one question. So, like on fee income side, I can see like there was a like a 3.6 crores in fourth quarter, in 3 crores in third quarter, but it was almost virtually nothing in the previous years. Like, what are the driving factors behind this? Can I understand? And the another question is, it's just a clarification. So you are mentioning 50 basis point rate hike in 1st of April 2023. So the overall impact on yields will be 30 to 50, 40 basis points, and then it would be stabilized around that point?
Yeah. So I'll go one by one. On your first question of the fee income, so this largely represents the processing fee that we get on closures. So every time there is a repayment or a partial repayment or BT out or when we do assignment or co-lending or when we receive any CLSS subsidy, we get a small fee from NHB. So every time we get a, so like we got 137 crores of subsidy, so that's why you see this number going up. So that is the first part. The second part of 50 basis points, yes, once we, you know, take this rate hike in 1st April, it will stabilize around that 30 to 40 basis points plus levels.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Shripal Doshi from Equities. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Good evening, and thank you for giving me the opportunity. And congrats on yet another strong quarter. So my question was pertaining to the branches that we have. So what percent of our branches would be more than 100 crore and what percent of our branches would be less than 50 crore in this or in the AUM? And secondly, in line with the same question, what would be the KRA, like if you could highlight some KRAs of a branch or of an employee who would be operating at a mature.
So about 22 branches out of 111 are more than 100 crores. Are you able to hear me?
Hello.
Shripal?
I think we got disconnected.
I think we got disconnected.
Mr. Shripal, please go ahead. Can you hear us? Since there is no reply from the line of Mr. Shripal, we'll go with the next. Next comes is Mona Ketan from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, so firstly on the non-interest income, you know, this component has declined sharply in FY23. So what is the outlook here? I understand it's partly driven by lower DA direct assignments. So could the could this as a percentage of assets remain same going forward, or how do you see this?
So we've been doing about 100 crores of DA approximately. We will continue to maintain that. So as a percent, net gain on DA as a percentage will remain ballpark around 1%.
Okay. So what was the primary reason for non-interest income coming down so sharply this year?
Are you specifically referring to net gain on DA or any specific line? Because when I see non-interest income, it's actually gone up from 1.1 to 1.3%.
Okay, so what I see is that non-interest income for this year stands at about 100 crore versus 118 crore last year. Okay, fine. I'll take it offline. The other question was on the write-offs. So how much of write-offs have you made this year? And if you could also share the cumulative write-offs the company has made so far.
Last year we had a write-off of approximately 20 to 22 crores. I think 22 crores to be exact. And this year has been less than 50% of that, so approximately 10 crores. Also, it's important to remember that, you know, the write-offs are majorly short recoveries when we close loans. And for most part of this write-off, we already have a provision. But when we actually close the loans, it appears in the write-off line and not in the net of provision line. So there is no financial impact per se. Because we replace those provisions with newer provisions. Your second question was the cumulative write-off. It will be approximately 40 to 45 crores. But if it is different, I will have to get back to you.
Sure, thank you. So FY23 was 10 crores?
Yes.
Write-off. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Manoj Oberoi from Yes Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Congrats on great numbers. This question is on the provisioning coverage on Stage 3 assets. So that's been consistently taken up. So any specific reason behind this, or is this pure conservatism, or is it also driven by the recovery experience on the ground?
See, we have thought that we want to keep the overall provision at 1% of the principal outstanding. Now, if you have to do that, you have to park it against some exposures. Now, in a situation where the 30 DPD is continuously improving, it becomes difficult to park it in stage 2 or in stage 1. Because, you know, probability of default models, etc., showing a write back. But then we said, okay, if you want to still continue it, given the conservatism approach we want to follow, so then the only place where we can practically park it is an overlay in stage 3. So that's how it ends up appearing there. As you have seen on the credit indicators, even the stage 3, the pre-RBI NPAs, back to March 20, March 19 levels. So no indicative stress, but it's just a parking position from how we are looking at it.
So, Nutan, if it's a management overlay, if in case if the stage 2 increases in the future, would you dip into stage 3 provision and shift some provision from stage 2, or would you still if it's already allocated to stage 3, then how would you then treat those provisions in the future?
So see, movement between stages is allowed because it's an overlay. It's not a big issue. I think in a situation where stage 2 increases, in my mind, that's a bigger issue to be resolved. So frankly, we'll have to go back and see where the concern is and why that would happen. What we are seeing even today, based on daily collections, our cash flows are actually improving. So no reason that we think that in the near term we should get to a stage where 30 DPD is concerning. From where we are today.
Got it. So it's pretty much floating in that way. Okay. And just on this Karnataka and Maharashtra, I mean, they're part of our core focus markets, but they kind of continue to grow slightly slower than the overall book. When do we see a stronger turnaround in those markets, and they started growing in line with the overall book?
Maharashtra should start turning around this year. As far as Karnataka is concerned, a large part of the business comes basically from Bangalore itself. I think it will continue at similar levels. But in Maharashtra, you should start seeing probably increase in AUM.
Okay. Thank you so much, best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Arvind R. from Sundaram Alternates. Please go ahead.
Hi. Sorry, this is like the same questions on fee income itself. Like, can we expect the fee income run rate to be around this level, or like do you think it could increase like as a percentage of assets or like something?
So I want to remind that this fee income is not the processing fee income that we recover from customers at the stage of onboarding. That goes and gets booked in the interest line itself under the EIR norms of Ind AS. This fee income pertains to early closures or early any additional fee that we recover from CLSS subsidy. So CLSS subsidy is no longer there, so that portion will not come. So what I can confirm is that probably 50% of this should continue because we will not have any more CLSS subsidy going forward.
Because of interest rate hike, do you expect a BT out rate to go up maybe?
So we have not seen that happening so far. If you see the BT out rate, it's more of a there is a year end spike, and otherwise it just follows a normal trend. And even through the last year, while there were multiple interest rate hikes, we have not seen during the year we have not seen any spike. The spike happened only in March or in the last quarter. So we expect the same trend to continue. And last year was a year of aggressive rate hikes. This year, really, that kind of aggressive rate hike should not happen, I think. Mostly people are expecting maybe one round or maybe not even that.
And lastly, just one question. I think at the start of the call, you were discussing about higher disbursement rate or growth in certain markets, like some kind of breakdown. Can you repeat that? Like,
no, I was just disbursement rate. Discussing about ticket size. Ticket size is higher in southern markets. Disbursement, oh. If you see the share of disbursement, more or less, if you see FY23, it reflects the same disbursement, share of disbursement as FY22. So we have not seen any major changes geographically in terms of share of disbursement.
Okay. Because we have, by AUM, we have the, clearly in your fact book, but it was not very clear on disbursement size, so that's why I wanted to understand.
So okay, we have, so that share of disbursement is more or less similar to what we had last year.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Shripal Toshi from Equities. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for taking up my question. So my question was pertaining to what percent of our branches are mature, that is more than 100 crore AUM size, and what percent of our branches will be below 50 crore AUM size. Secondly, in the same line, if you could highlight some KRA differences for a branch which would be mature versus a branch which is relatively new.
So we have about 25 branches which are 100 plus, but 100, there's still a lot of headroom to grow because we are looking at each of these branches reaching at least 200 crores. If you look at the branches which are below 50, it would be about 50 branches, 60 branches actually. 60 branches would be around less than or equal to 50 crores of AUM. In terms of KRAs, the larger branches would have slightly more, focus or bias towards collections because the volume of collections would be higher in the larger branches. In smaller branches, the bias towards collections would be lower. I mean, it's just a function of volume of collections, just proportional to the portfolio.
And sir, in terms of, say, employee targets, so like for an RM of a relatively larger branch would probably have a target, monthly target, or if you could highlight that.
Yeah, so relationship managers have broadly two sets of targets. One target is to achieve a dispersal number for the month. So it will be around 50 to 70 lakhs of dispersal per month. And they also have their collection allocation. So typically a relationship manager would get about between 10 to 20 loans to be collected. So we are talking about 75,000 plus loans, and with a 13% rate, it's about 10,000 loans to be collected every month. So typically an RM would get about 10 to 20 loans to collect. So broadly, I mean, at a very high level, this is the KRA. There is a dispersal target and there is a collection target. We also do, on a quarterly basis, we set some new priorities for them, which is, you know, either it could be a yield target or it could be a channel diversification target. It could be, you know, number of active channels. It could be a product diversification target, things like that. That depends upon quarter to quarter, we change the priorities. But what remains static is basically the dispersal target and the collection target.
Got it, sir. So second question was with respect to the LTVs. So if I look at it, more than 80% LTV is close to 34% of our overall origination currently. Now that has been coming down. Is there a focus, is there a strategy to further bring it down?
So this is actually AUM. Gives you a share of AUM at the time of origination. If you look at actually our current current share of cases which are greater than 80% LTV, it would be far lower than this. Don't have the figure right now in front of me, but my guess is it would be around maybe 10 to 15%.
Got it, sir. And the last question was with respect to the rate. You highlighted early in the call that there has been an increase of 5 to 10% in terms of EMI for a customer. Now, is that including the 50 basis point last rate hike that we have done?
Yes.
Yeah, after the recent rate hike also.
Got it, sir. And is there any other rate hike on the cards?
Not at the moment. I mean, we'll have to see how the policy rates move and then we can decide if at all we need to increase it.
Got it, sir. So this quarter we've also like come up with dividend payout. So what's the strategy there in terms of payout ratio that we would want to sort of maintain?
So we have done some analysis and we said for a company of our size and you know, which is declaring dividend for the first time, this kind of a ratio is a good ratio to have. And we'll maintain this for some time. Based on our analysis and dividend dividend policy, we have arrived at a 10% dividend payout. So we are likely to probably keep it at these kind of levels.
Got it, sir. Thank you so much and good luck for the next quarter.
Thank you.
A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Next question comes from the line of Arvind R. from Sundaram Alternates. Please go ahead.
Hi, I just have just one last question. So you were mentioning about MCLR based loans loans from banks. So like, is that what like predominant funding from banks like makes up like or does it also consist of repo rate or other external benchmark?
So bulk of it is actually MCLR linked. Almost 75% of our bank loans are MCLR linked, and the rest is based on external benchmark, including repo and T-bill.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Ladies and gentlemen, as there are no further questions, we have reached the end of question and answer session. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Manoj Viswanathan for closing comments.
Thank you. Thank you everyone for joining us on the call. I hope you have been able to answer all your queries. In case you require any further details, you may get in touch with Manish Kayal, who heads the investor relations function. Thank you so much.
Thank you. On behalf of Home First Finance Company India Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.